the issue at hand, the proposed Dash One amendment, we are good to go on that amendment after the initial analysis here. So, any further discussion on the Dash One? Any objection to the Dash One? Hearing none, Dash One is so amended. Chair would entertain a motion to send the bill to the full House. Excuse me, my apologies.
The bill as amended.
The bill as amended, not to the full House, but to the Ways and Means Subcommittee. Motion has been so made by Representative Krieger to send House Bill 3487 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
As I mentioned, when we had the initial public hearing on this bill, I commend both the proponents and the chief sponsor for this bill. But as Representative Hobson has mentioned, I am very hesitant to divert any funds away from highway maintenance and other transportation infrastructure maintenance. I would have preferred to have supported this bill with an increase in revenue to provide the funds that are anticipated, and would support it in that form, but I won't support it if it's a diversion of funds from highway and bridge and tunnel maintenance.
Additional comments, members? The chair would like to, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted one more time to reiterate the value of trees to maintenance, as Doug just agreed, in prevention of erosion to the highway subsurfaces and around the bridge abutments. And so, you know, I feel that, you know, as well as helping filter stormwater from roadways and reduce pollutants. So I just want to reiterate that there is a benefit in highway and road maintenance with the planting of trees.
All right.
And I'm for the bill.
The chair would like to state that, for the record, the chair also opposes the concept of diverting much-needed resources from gas tax revenues to any program, irrespective of how good it may be. And I think there's great value in this program. For the purposes of offering a courtesy vote, the chair will vote yes on this bill, send it to Ways and Means to have, I think, a more accurate analysis of its potential economic impact upon the state. And with that, hearing no further discussion, members, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Aye.
Senator
Krieger?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator
Ackerman? No.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative
Nolan?
Aye.
Vice
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Crook?
Aye. House Bill 3487 is hereby passed to the, as amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means, and we will have no carrier. All right. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3487.
That was a due pass.
And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3815. No.
Okay.
Ray, would you explain a little bit about this bill to us from your SMS?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Let people know what an SMS is twice today.
It's a staff measure summary.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3815 is known as the fertilizer bill in short. It repeals current fertilizer statutes and replaces it with a new set of statutes which define agricultural amendment, mineral, and other terms. It regulates the sale, offering, and sale and distribution of fertilizer and agricultural amendments, minerals, lime products, and custom mixes. It authorizes fees. It requires record keeping and creates a fertilizer research committee to advise the Director of Agriculture and specifies the terms in office. It names violations and imposes a civil penalty of not more than $500 for the first violation, $1,500 for the second violation, and not more than $10,000 for each subsequent violation within a 3-year period. It imposes penalties resulting from gross negligence or willful misconduct that results in substantial harm to the environment or human health of not more than $10,000 for the initial violation or any subsequent violation. And Mr. Chair, we have before us dash 8 amendments that I put in everybody's chair that are offered for consideration.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate that. Quick look at this bill. Members, we intend to hear House Bill 3815 today, and if at all possible, as we understand we have agreement on amendments, the dash 8 amendments, we intend to move this bill out of this committee. The chair would like to thank everyone who's in attendance and has been working for a very long time on this issue. I know it is a true labor of love, and we appreciate that. Chair would like to call forward at this time Scott McKinney, Scott Burlingham, Terry Witt, and Richard Kosasan. Don't see Richard.
Not in here yet, I think.
Okay. Welcome, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you here. And for the record, state your name.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. On my right is Scott McKinney, Director of the Far West Agribusiness Association. On my left is Scott Burlingham, owner of Woodburn Fertilizer. I thought what we would do today is kind of team up on you, give you a little bit of history as to how we came to put this product together, a little bit about the fertilizer industry and where we think this will help us take the fertilizer industry. First, I would like to apologize for having to hand engross my testimony to the Dash 8, but that was just completed about an hour ago or so. I hope it is the last set of amendments, and I'm sure Chuck Taylor at LC does too. I think we may have set a record for 8 complete 30-page bills before a hearing was even held. But in any case, we Oregonians for Food and Shelter does wholeheartedly support the Dash 8 version of House Bill 3815, which basically brings the Oregon statutes regarding fertilizers into the new millennium. The last major rewrite of our fertilizer statutes in Oregon was in 1955. The product before you today represents over a year's work by more than 20 different individuals. It was a voluntary industry-led effort undertaken without the threat of initiative or without the threat of litigation. We did this because we felt it was the right thing to do. We wanted to get the fertilizer statutes updated in the state of Oregon so that we would be consistent with not only our sister states in the Northwest, but with new technology and new standards that are coming out at the federal level. Included in our work group were not only representatives of the fertilizer industry from basic manufacturer all the way on down to those who put together the consumer products that you see in your local stores, but we also included the ODA staff people that are charged with regulating fertilizers in the state. We had a representative from DEQ who was knowledgeable in the waste area, and also a representative from the environmental community who, by the way, was there to keep us honest and make sure that what we were doing was not, in fact, portrayed as some clandestine meeting of the minds. It was indeed a transparent process. I won't belabor you in terms of all the gory details of how we got from where we were to where we are, other than I estimate it's probably very close to about 2,000 person hours to date included in this effort. And what we have come up with is what we term a solid base upon which we will build as new technology and new standards are developed across the country. This is consistent with not only California, Idaho, and Washington, but it is also consistent with things that are happening at the national level. Following testimony from Scott on my left and Scott on my right, we will then walk through the bill and answer any questions that you might have And I believe that the Department of Agriculture representatives, if they haven't already snuck out of the room, will be behind us and help us out when we might need it. With that, I'll turn it over to Scott McKinney.
Thank you. Scott, for the record.
Thank you. Appreciate being here. Scott McKinney, Executive Director, Far West Agribusiness Association. This is a five-state organization representing the retail fertilizer and agrochemical industry, as well as the manufacturers, including Oregon, in that five-state mix. I had the privilege, although I will say there were days when I didn't think it was quite so privileged, of being a co-chair of the advisory committee who worked on this bill. And I will also tell you that I served in a similar capacity for the Idaho Department of Ag, and I'm currently a member of the Washington Department of Ag Fertilizer Advisory Committee as well. So you can see I have no life. It's just dealing with fertilizer committees. A lot of what Terry said I had already written down in my testimony, so I'm not going to belabor the point and reread it all and repeat it. But I would say that, you know, Far West does support this bill 3815-8. In general terms, is really the framework of a beginning. It's certainly not an end to the process. This is going to allow us to continue discussions with all appropriate parties as we work through development of the rules, which will be the key to implementation of this bill. There are two or three things I'd like to emphasize on this, if possible. Labeling was one of the things we wanted to take a strong look at. We have improved the general labeling requirements with fertilizers, with guarantee analysis. We have had some of these things clarified for them. We define what's going to be classified as a fertilizer and provide provisions that will allow for even low guaranteed analysis products, and further define what will be classified as mineral ag amendments and lime products. There's also placed additional requirements on those who register fertilizer products. This includes defining the industry, process, and location of any waste-derived ingredient. The registrant will also be required to supply analytical data regarding the non-nutritives in the fertilizer. The goal is to create a transparent process whereby the agency would be able to evaluate and monitor these products as they come into the state. In addition, we're giving the agency authority to develop appropriate levels of non-nutritives in rule. Finally, we're asking the department to place registration information on a website that will allow all interested parties to assess information about fertilizer products. In the copy of my testimony, I gave you a sample of what the Washington Department of Ag's website is like and the kind of information that's there. That's not necessarily dictating what this site should look like, but is giving you a framework of what to reference when we're talking about this. I should also tell you that California is considering a similar thing at this point in time. I had a call yesterday regarding this, and Idaho has authority to do so. The Idaho Department of Ag has authority to do so, although we did not put that into their rewrite of their bill. They already had authority to handle this kind of thing, and at some point they will be looking at doing it as well. Washington is the only state I'm aware of that has one up and running. Accountability. By stepping up the sampling and monitoring provisions, we believe we will improve the accountability of the industry to the agency and to the public. For products that do not meet program provisions, the department's granted additional authority to address violators. The department has also been given additional rulemaking authority in a number of the fertilizer-related areas. This will allow the department flexibility to address issues as they arise in the future that we may not even know what they might be now, but giving them the ability to address things, I think, is important, along with their advice and counsel with all the appropriate parties, like they did with this committee. Funding, we want to assure that there's adequate funding to maintain an efficiently operated program. And we also recognize that there is a surplus on hand right at this point in time. So we put into the process of where we will buy down that excess funds at the moment, but still allow for us to be able to...
Excuse me, Scott. Did I just hear you correctly saying that there's a surplus of fertilizer?
Well, you know, we were talking about maybe...
I just haven't seen my prices go down a whole lot on my fertilizer on the farm. I was just curious about that.
Yeah, he was referring to this building.
Oh, I see. Surplus of this bill or the amendments thereof, correct?
No, surplus of fertilizer in this building.
Oh, I see. Please continue. My apologies. I couldn't let that pass.
What we've done here is that the funding that we put into this and the fees that we've been assessing, we spread over a large number of fertilizer registrants, some of which may not have been included before. that will be paid by the original manufacturer of the fertilizer or first party distributing the product into the state by any party who creates new products within the state from products for which no tonnage tax has been paid, or and by those who create a custom blend products from registered products and market the blend, and there will also be individual product registration fees. We believe the funding mechanism, which, trust me, we handed around on more than a few occasions, is fair, equitable, and will provide long-term adequate funding into the department. And finally, as was mentioned a little bit ago, we recognize the continued need for research on the interaction between fertilizers and surface water and groundwater, and build in continuing funding for such research. But in order for what we believe to improve the quality and usefulness of the research that will be going on, we empowered the director to appoint an oversight committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Creek, I just wanted to make one comment. The material that you were referring to is unmanipulated bull manure, and that would not fall under registration or these laws. So that's a different classification.
Thank you for the clarification. We do appreciate those delicately worded clarifications. All right. Scott, the other Scott, thank you for coming and for the record. Hang on a moment.
Can we ask a question?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Mr. McKinney? Mm-hmm. Which one is Mr. McKinney? Okay. Which Scott's which?
Scott's squared.
No. Okay. Mr. McKinney, how do you monitor this process? How do you monitor products?
We're allowing the department to increase their sampling opportunity. In other words, they will have people go to the field, they have probes, so they will take samples, they'll compare the samples with what the product is registered. They should match. If they don't match, we've given the department authority to deal with the situation.
Mr. Chair,
sure.
Follow up, and where would I find that schedule?
Pardon me?
Where would I find that schedule of when that monitoring is going to happen?
That is determined by the department, Representative Nelson.
Representative, I think that ODA will be able to shed a little light on that as they come forward. I would imagine that will be part of the rules that will be need to be developed as we implement this legislation.
Okay, thank you. Another follow-up then?
Sure.
Mr. McKinney, in this granting of additional authority to address violators, what is that additional authority?
Well, they were, in our view, somewhat limited on their ability to address violators in a manner that I think was consistent with what some of our neighboring states were doing and what we as an industry felt was needed to have done. So we put the provisions in place to do so. And, what, you know, again, this won't be done in a vacuum, Representative Nelson. It will be before the rules go out. We'll be working with them on deciding what's appropriate and what isn't. But that's why you have the increased levels of potential fines that are in the provisions that are already in the bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned, Mr. McKinney and Mr. Witt, about, you know, this granting of authority and who approves this additional authority.
Well, one, to at least create the opportunity for the department to do that, and it would not, like I said, I don't really believe it would be done in a vacuum. It would be done within the conversation with the industry and the other affected parties that would be appropriate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I think one of the problems that we had prior to this bill is that there actually was no civil penalty authority for either adulterated or misbranded fertilizer products in the state. The only authorities they really had were embargo authorities and authorities to cancel re-registration of the product. We needed to give them additional authority so that if there was, in fact, a misbranded or adulterated product that needed to be taken out of the channels of commerce, they could so do that, whether it was from a environmental or human health perspective or just from a mislabeling perspective that the customer was not getting what he or she was guaranteed to get in that fertilizer. And the purpose for the fees, and as was noted by Ray, that it is a graduated fee penalty situation. Starts out at $500, goes to $1,500. These are maximums, and then maximum of $10,000. is to give the department some a hammer in case they need to use it on some recalcitrants. That's plain and simple why it's there. And the if you look at the statutes, they use the word may rather than shall. So there is considerable discretion on the part of the department with regard to whether they will levy a civil penalty. And also there is a provision for the director to either reduce or waive that penalty. So I think there's a considerable amount of checks and balances, but everyone in the industry, in other words, the people who are being regulated by this bill, felt that these additional enforcement capabilities of the department were necessary and proper.
Last question, please, Mr. Chair. I guess the question, you know, that I keep finding over and over is, you know, who's really responsible for justice and honesty and truth and not only truth in lending, but truth in ballot measures. I mean, truth in, for consumer protection. And I mean, you know, where this responsibility lies, and I keep seeing it in various committees, you know, being vested in different departments rather than justice. And so I'm always amazed at, you know, when I see these.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I might add that, you know, what we are really doing is when a registrant registers their product, they are the ones that make the statement to the department guaranteeing what is going to be in their product. In other words, that statement comes from them. It doesn't come from an analysis from the Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. So if you were a fertilizer manufacturer and you wanted to register your fertilizer with me and you wanted to sell it as a 12-12-12, and that's what you're willing to guarantee on your label, then that's what the standard you are held to. And it is the department then that draws samples periodically to ensure that the customer gets at least the fertilizer value that you are guaranteeing that he is receiving when he buys that product. So in essence, what the department is really enforcing is a guaranteed statement that the fertilizer manufacturer or distributor themselves has guaranteed to the department and to the customer.
So last question, please.
Okay.
I guess I'm going to now assume that initially we do not do an analysis to say, to see if what this individual's telling our people is really what it says initially. We do not do that.
Of course, there's representative. I'll get this down right.
Well,
Chairman Crawford.
What do I know about fertilizer? I just want to know that what I've what somebody's telling me. I want some verification that what they're selling me is what I'm getting.
The registration information the manufacturer gives to the department must match up with the label that you have on your bag, box, or whatever it is that you purchased. They've got to match. That's why we're wanting the department to increase and improve their monitoring, their sampling capabilities, so that assurance is there. I will also tell you that the manufacturers, you know, and retailers, there's an issue there. If a manufacturer does not have the correct analyses, then my retail dealers, like Scott, will not be able to create the proper blends based on his analysis in the end. In other words, if it's a product that he puts into a blend and it's off, well, then his end blend is off. So it's important for us in the industry to make sure the analyses that we have from manufacturer to dealer is fine. So it's important that the department has the ability to have to be able to check the analysis, that the manufacturer and others who are involved in the process are up to snuff, and we're just giving them additional tools to do so.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Nelson, I think to answer the specific question that you asked, upon submission of their registration form, they must supply an analysis by a laboratory using approved methods,
okay,
which does verify that their material is what they say it is.
So, gentlemen, if I'm understanding you correctly in reading the bill, unless the -8 amendments change that, there are actually three processes or three requirements that have to be coordinated in that the registration, the labeling, and the actual sampling in the field, all of those have to match up the same time. Okay, fair enough. Please continue. Scott.
The other Scott, for the record.
Chair Krebs and members of the House Agriculture and Forestry Committee. Good afternoon. My name is Scott Burlingham. I own Woodburn Fertilizer Incorporated in Woodburn. I am the third generation of my family to operate this business. We have a long history of providing crop inputs to growers in the North Willamette.
Scott, could you speak into the microphone, please? Thank you.
In addition, we package products for the lawn and garden market. I also served on this fertilizer advisory committee that developed the language you see before you today. I support the actions taken by the committee and the efforts of the Oregon Department of Agriculture in updating this law. As a retail dealer, it is important for my customers to know that the products I handle meet the rules and regulations set by the department. It is also important for me to know that my suppliers follow the law, as Scott mentioned. It is also important to me to know that the department, who has the responsibility of making sure the products meet the law's provisions, has the wherewithal to enforce the law. One of the key items, as has been noted in previous testimony, is this is really a beginning of a process. This is not the end. This bill puts the framework into place to continue our discussions with the department regarding the development of the rules. These discussions will include, among other items, limits on non-nutritive elements in fertilizer and inspection fees. It is important the department has the ability to develop such rules as conditions warrant. I look forward to working with the department in the rules development. Agriculture is in the midst of an economic crisis. My customers are hurting. My business is hurting. One of the expectations my customers and my businesses expect is we are treated fairly and evenly when it comes to regulations that affect how we do business. All I ask is an even playing field and that everyone in this business is subject to the same set of rules that I am subject to, nationally and internationally. No one is given an economic advantage by non-compliance. We need the assurance that the Department of Agriculture is watching over the products we use. We know it is a tough job. We know the department is doing what it can to fulfill its mandate, and I believe this bill will help the development even more by giving them the tools necessary that will provide the confidence in the fertilizer products I sell to my customers use, and do so with an even-handed, fair way. Therefore, I encourage your support. Thank you.
All right, Scott, thank you. Representative.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Burlingame, I'm proud of your company. This is a long time to be in this business, three generations. Mm-hmm. What's the industry here in Oregon? I mean, is this a big industry?
Agriculture has been a big industry.
No, the fertilizer portion of it. Compared, if we were taking out nursery and is this a, I mean, are there very many Woodburn Fertilizer Inks? Would you be one of three or one of ten?
One of over a dozen in the I-5 corridor.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And could I just ask you if you do, is there some evaluation of laboratories doing analysis? And I'm not going to ask this again, I promise. I mean, it's mutually accepted, like.
Yes.
The good housekeeping seal of approval.
Absolutely.
I mean, does the industry across the nation so that I can protect Representative Hobson if I bought some for her?
Yes.
And know that I'm giving her what it says. So there is some certification to these laboratories that are doing this, so we can believe in truth in fertilizer.
Absolutely. They have a set of rules that they have to go by.
Okay.
Chairman Krupp, Vice Chairman.
I'm feeling better about this.
Vice Chairman, there is an organization called the American Association of Plant Food Control Officials, affectionately known as AFCO, which is an organization of the regulatory officials of every department of State Department of Agriculture in the United States.
Okay.
They've set down model legislation, model requirements for testing, analysis across the board, and part of the reason for that is to have this uniform type of examination, okay, to have it so it's consistent state to state to state.
Okay.
So there are this organization in place to handle just those kinds of situations.
I appreciate, Mr. Chair, knowing that. Could I just have that name of this one more time? American Association of
Plant Food Control Officials.
Plant
Food Control Officials.
Control what?
Officials.
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 Officials. Oh.
Okay, Representative Nolan, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I ask a question, I want to give public recognition to Mr. Witt and his organization for the extraordinary effort they have put in to not only bringing the initial bill, but to hearing some concerns that evolved as we developed this over the last week or so. And in particular, burning the midnight oil yesterday and early this morning in order to bring an amendment to you today. I have complained in the past about amendments that show up at the start of the hearing, and now I am guilty of the same today. And I plead only forgiveness because it is the result of Mr. Witt's willingness to engage consideration of amendments that actually streamlined some of the previous amendments that we had brought forward to the committee. And it was his willingness to work with us that allows us to bring a consensus amendment to the committee that I'm willing to support, and I am delighted to hear his willingness to support.
Representative Nolan, we were noticing that I was just going to remark that to Representative Hobson that I'm very sad this is so late in getting here today that I didn't have a chance.
I understand exactly, and that actually leads to my question, since this is the time for questions rather than speeches. Mr. Witt, would you be so kind as to just summarize the difference between the Dash 5 and the Dash 8, which is on page 8 of the Dash 8?
Chairman Trapp, Representative Nolan, I will be glad to do that.
Just use the chemical symbols, not the whole word.
Right. The only difference between the Dash 5 amendments that were drafted and available at the last hearing and the current Dash 8 is on page 8, lines 3 through 12. It was requested that we be more specific in terms of how this information would be available to customers who purchase fertilizer and the general public with regard to identification of waste-derived materials in products registered with the department and components of potential concern, such as heavy metals and other compounds or ingredients that would be required by rule to be noted and analysis provided. What the addition does is just basically say that this information will be accessible by product name, ingredient, or reportable substance, and at a minimum it shall include the name of any product identified as a waste-derived product in the registration process, the standard industrial classification code of the facility that generates that waste-derived product, and also the type and level of metals or other substances required to be reported by the department in those products. So this information would all be available on a website and could be searched by those categories by interested parties, either farmers or those who might be concerned about the impact on the environment or human health. And those are the only changes to this bill. So it is, with that addition, identical to the Dash 5s.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair? And I'll point out that the reason that that's the only amendment to the only change from the Dash 5 is because Mr. Witt had been willing to incorporate previous suggestions that I had brought to him in his Dash 5 amendment. If I might ask the question of Mr. Scott, Mr. McKinney and Mr. Burlingame, I know this is very short notice, but I just want to check in with you on whether you've had a chance to discuss that change in the Dash 8 with Mr. Witt, and if you have any opinion on it.
Chairman Croft, Representative Nolan, Terry talked to me yesterday late about it, and I support it.
Thank you. Mr. Burlingame?
Yes, Representative Nolan. I thought this was the way it was going to go anyway. We talked about the Internet, and Washington does this already, so this was, as far as I was concerned, how we were going to do it anyway.
Great. Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Nolan. And in that regard, when it comes to internet reporting, we're not having any information personal information about individual farmers or that type of thing included in that, correct?
Chairman Krupp, that is correct. The one of the other reasons for having internet internet information is so that we can have a label that will not be constantly changing. If we did not provide that information via a readily amendable communication source, we would be constantly changing labels and having mass confusion of people trying to find products in channels of commerce and re-sticker them or whatever. So this allows us to have a clean label, a website address on that label that says, for further information about heavy metals or other materials, contact this site. They'll be able to go pull the product up by product name or by ingredient of concern and find out all that information, and it will be as current as the department updates their website. So these things can change, and for example, if Scott over here, who is custom blending, he may change suppliers to his custom mix. If we had labeling that had to reflect that on the package, he would then have to come up with a whole new label. This way he can contact the Department of Agriculture, tell them what the changes might be in the guaranteed analysis or ingredient list of the components in his fertilizer, and it can be readily updated. So it's a matter of convenience for the labeling, and also a matter of actually interstate commerce, because many fertilizer dealers would resist making a label exclusively for Oregon, and this way they don't have to.
No, that makes good sense. Am I understanding correctly that the bill, and I know Catherine Veneta is here and will talk to us a little bit later, her thoughts on this legislation, but in terms of pulp and paper and waste, and across the road from my farm is the Pope and Talbot and Georgia Pacific paper mill, and both of those mills spread some of their limestone, which they use in their processes, out on the fields, and we use that as farmers as a very positive soil amendment for the soil. How does this bill affect that, if you're talking about levels of metals and so forth?
I'll take a shot, and I hope that Janet or somebody will needle me if I get it wrong. The bottom line is that the triggering mechanism for registration of these materials is if a claim is made for a nutritive value in or benefit to growing a crop or a guaranteed analysis of nutrients. If in fact that is the case, then the manufacturer or provider of this material would then be required to register that material with the Department of Agriculture. In registering, they would have to do a guaranteed analysis and provide the data on levels of whatever the department requires at that time of submission.
But, Terry, the key is that you said there's a trigger. If there's a claim that there's a nutritive value,
that's
correct?
That's correct. So, for example, if someone were to just spread the manure from their own barnyard on their own property, that's not covered, nor is, and as I was kind of kidding Representative Krieger before, unmanipulated manure is not covered. It's very, very clear the four different categories are fertilizers, soil amendments, soil minerals, and lime. Those are the four categories, and there are very distinct definitions for each of those categories in the bill. And depending upon which category they fall in, there are some requirements then that they must follow.
Okay. All right. Members, do we have questions? Representative Krieger. Question?
Yes, Mr. Well, maybe a statement, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. I want him to define manipulated in the reference to what he's talking about.
By manipulated, Representative Krieger, we're talking about processing it so that it in fact changes its characteristics, either drying it or dewatering it, something of that nature, but it would be manipulated from a standpoint of making it a saleable product.
All right, follow up.
I feel better.
We do manipulate a lot of that around here, that's for sure.
All right, I think that's quite enough. thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate your appearance here today. Laura Weiss. Laura, come forward if you would, please. Thank you. Welcome, Laura. What's your thoughts here today?
My thoughts here today, Representative Chair Krupp. For the record, my name is Laura Weiss. I'm with the Oregon Environmental Council. I have prepared testimony. I will go through some of it, not all of it, and then summarize at the end. OEC's primary interest in this bill is in relation to the waste-derived fertilizers and the registration thereof. We know that common fertilizers that are used in agriculture by homeowners and others in urban and rural areas may contain toxic chemicals from industrial facilities. That's because fertilizer manufacturers often recycle waste from industries such as steel mills, blast furnaces, and pulp and paper mills into fertilizer products. While recycling is generally a good idea, this particular practice poses a health and environmental threat because these industrial wastes are often laden with toxic metals such as lead, mercury, and cadmium, and other long-lived organic pollutants like dioxin. Unfortunately, exposure to these toxic metals and other chemicals is a health concern for farmers and others who handle these products, and it's also a health and environmental problem when plants absorb these contaminants and are then eaten by people, or when they contaminate water because of runoff. The practice of using these industrial wastes as fertilizer is not inherently bad, per se. It is a problem, however, when the industrial waste contains these toxic metals that I've referred to. So spreading fertilizer contaminated with toxic metals and other chemicals on our land doesn't really make sense. Therefore, we think the best solution is to prevent the use of industrial waste as a fertilizer unless it can be shown that the waste is free of toxic constituents. This is really best achieved on the front end of the industrial process. We think we need to provide an economic and regulatory incentives for industries to keep these toxins out of their waste products in the first place. And this would result in a win-win situation where industrial waste, free of toxic chemicals, could be recycled into fertilizer without placing farmers, other consumers, and the environment at risk. So we believe the best standard for toxics in fertilizer is zero. However, House Bill 3815 directs the Department of Ag to set standards for toxic metals and other pollutants that are protective of human health and the environment. It'll be incumbent on the Department of Ag to set these standards that are protective of human health and the environment. We believe it is in the interest of all Oregonians to protect the viability and the value of farmland in Oregon, so it's crucial to ensure that these standards are stringent enough to avoid compromising the value of farmland. We think that, for example, a non-degradation policy that results in no net increase in toxics in soil would be highly advisable in this regard when setting these standards. Until farmers and consumers can be assured that waste-derived fertilizers are free of toxic constituents, we think those farmers and consumers have a right to know what chemicals might be in the fertilizers they're spreading on their land. We think the best way to get this information to these consumers and farmers is to put it directly on the label. House Bill 3815 already requires other pieces of information to be on the label, so it's not unreasonable to add a statement identifying the product as waste-derived, identifying which chemicals are contained in the product, and the source of the waste. Short of that, however, we believe that the department must make the information about waste-derived fertilizers and their toxic constituents available on the web. The website should be searchable by chemical and by product name, so consumers and farmers can avoid certain toxic chemicals that might be of special concern. The Dash 8 amendments appear to achieve this goal, at least, and that we're very pleased with. In summary, while OEC believes that the best approach to dealing with waste-derived fertilizers is to ensure that the fertilizer spread on Oregon's land is free of all toxic chemicals entirely, we are, however, comfortable supporting the Dash 8 amendments at this time, and we expect to work with the department to ensure that the standards are protective of human health and the environment, and that toxics data is readily available to farmers and consumers. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Members, do we have questions?
Thank you.
Wow, look at that.
That was easy.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate your testimony here today. The chair would like to call Rhett Lawrence. Rhett, are you here? Come forward, sir. And on deck will be Catherine Vanetta after Rhett. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
For the record, state your name.
Good afternoon, Chair Krupp and members of the committee. My name is Rhett Lawrence. I am the Toxics and Clean Water Advocate for OSPIRG, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest advocacy group with over 27,000 members across the state of Oregon. And I'm here today essentially to voice OSPIRG's opposition to this bill in its current form. I've submitted my written testimony to you, and I won't go through all of that. And in fact, the Dash 8 amendments that have been proposed cover, they do address one of our major concerns, which was that the bill as written would have prevented public access to certain certain information on toxic constituents of chemicals, and I think the Dash 8 amendments have addressed that fairly well. And Laura Weiss from OEC pretty well summarized the concerns that OSPIRG would have as well on the impacts of these toxic constituents on human health and the environment. So essentially, OSPIRG would have would contend that those most dangerous toxic wastes, such as lead, cadmium, mercury, dioxins, should not be allowed to be used in fertilizer at all. And so we would push for a stronger version of this bill, which would have banned those chemicals outright. I mean, these chemicals are just so inherently dangerous to human health that, you know, we believe they have no place in the food stream, and they should not be spread on fields that we are, you know, the crops that we are consuming. And secondly, we would urge strongly that the label that is on the package have a more have a better summary of the contents of the fertilizer. As it stands now, the label will direct a consumer to the website to go find out the information about the toxic constituents of that fertilizer. And we would simply urge that the label that is on the package, and the label is going to have to be redesigned anyway, that the label that is on the package identify that there are toxic constituents, that those are waste-derived toxic constituents, and identify what those are. Because as it stands now, the purchaser or the consumer would have to take the affirmative step of accessing the DEQ website or calling up DEQ or ODA, excuse me, to find out what the ingredients of that fertilizer are. And so we would have pushed for a stronger bill, which would have included better labeling requirements on the actual label. So that said, Representative Nolan had previously introduced some amendments, the Dash 4 amendments, which now have apparently fallen by the wayside. Those would have addressed our concerns adequately. And so that's what OSPIRG would have encouraged this body to adopt. And short of that, we cannot support this legislation. We feel it just does not go far enough to protect human health and the environment in the state of Oregon. So,
okay. Well, thank you, Rhett. Members, we have questions for Rhett. You also are lucky today, sir.
Great.
Welcome. Thanks.
Thanks
for
much.
Coming. We appreciate your comments. Catherine Vanetta. And then up next, and last but not least, will be our good friends from Oregon Department of Agriculture. Welcome, Catherine, for the record.
Catherine Vanetta, Governmental Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. Chair Krupp, members of the committee. Northwest Pulp and Paper is a trade association representing a majority of the pulp and our paper mills in the Northwest on environmental and energy issues. Northwest Pulp and Paper supports House Bill 3815-8 amendments. We feel that this is a good step towards addressing the issue of what's in fertilizer and the community's right to know about what is in there. There have been questions raised about pulp and paper industrial residuals today, and to set the record straight on that, if the trigger was hit in 3815, then the industrial byproducts that would fall under the new definitions created in this bill of agricultural amendment, waste-derived product, or lime product, would be handled that way. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Wow. Thank you. Chuck Craig, Chris Kirby, ODA, please come forward. The gentlemen know we've saved all the really tough questions for you.
Seems like it. Mr. Chair and members, for the record, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director, Department of Agriculture. With me is Chris Kirby, the administrator of our Pesticides Division, which administratively houses our fertilizer program. Mr. Chair and members, the department supports House Bill 3815 as amended. We believe it's a significant step forward in the regulation of fertilizer in Oregon. We see about four significant points to make. For the first time, we'll really be able to address heavy metals or other non-nutritive substances in fertilizer. The bill provides an adequate and fair funding source. It enhances our enforcement capability, and it also, for the first time, allows people to know in much greater detail what is in the fertilizer that they purchase or which is used on crops, and find out that information in a relatively straightforward manner. So, Mr. Chair, a lot's been said. To just in summary, we support the Dash 8 amendments. We applaud the industry's responsible leadership in bringing the bill forward, and we look forward to working with stakeholders and interest groups in developing the rules and implementing the program. And we'd be happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, go ahead.
Yes, can we address, please, Mr. Craig, some of Rhett Lawrence's issues? One was that the labeling requirements are inadequate. The toxic ingredients don't have to be identified on the product label. Is that true? Not that I doubt it, but I just want to further follow up. I don't mean that. I'm just wondering, are we remiss?
I don't know that we would agree with that, but I'm going to ask Mr. Kirby to respond to that.
For the record, my name is Chris Kirby. I'm administrator of the Pesticides Division with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The House Bill 3815 with the Dash 8 amendments does specifically require registrants to identify to the department the composition of the materials, including the non-nutritive constituents. In addition to that, I believe the current wordage requires that the product labeling identify that the material, that if the fertilizer product did originate from a waste product, that that be identified. However, it does not require specifically that all of the analytical information presented to the department in the registration process is also contained on the labeling.
Mr. Kirby, Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Kirby, would that be available for individuals to find out should they want to pursue it further?
Representative Nelson, Mr. Vice Chair, yes, that would be readily available through the website, which is specifically addressed in the proposed legislation.
Okay. Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair. And, okay, so that takes care of the open records law, then, that fully tells me that the data can be further gone into. So the dangerous toxins from the use in fertilizer, Is there a position on this by this agency that I just learned about, this laboratory that controls this work? Whereby I put the note, some association of officials of products, where my note is.
Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, some of the constituents that are non-nutritive do have toxic properties, and that is recognized. I am not a toxicologist, and I cannot speak to what levels of those various materials have to be ingested or absorbed in order to reach a toxic level. But the department, with this proposed legislation, would be required to establish standards that the products would have to adhere to, so that if a material contained more of a particular material than allowed by the standard, then we would not allow it to be registered if we found a product that contained more than was allowed by the standard, then it would be subject to embargo, stop sale, and potential enforcement action.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, gentlemen, I have a question for you. Any guess what the fiscal might be on this thing?
Mr. Chair, we have drafted a fiscal impact statement. However, we have not yet submitted that. We project that for the first biennium that the expenditures for this would be, that the revenues that would be, grand total of expenditures would be about $346,000.
And your revenues, Chris?
Revenues, as I say, this is a draft, Mr. Chair. The revenues for the first biennium we are projecting at about $960,000.
And that, what were the expenditures?
That, Mr. Chair, I need to explain that.
Please. Thank you.
This physical was projected with the maximum fees allowed by statute. And if you look at the proposed legislation, the department is authorized to charge up to a maximum amount. This fiscal was prepared assuming that we would charge the maximum amount. That is not traditionally what we have done. We have traditionally, with the fertilizer program and other programs that we administer, adjust the fees to cover the expenses, so that we clearly have the ability to finance the program with the fee caps that are presented in the legislation.
Well, as a fairly substantial fertilizer purchaser, I will appreciate that very much when I get my next bill. Okay. Members, questions?
Did you just announce your possible conflict of interest?
I will when it comes time to vote the bill out. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much. Anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 3815 that isn't signed up? Hearing none, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3815 and open a work session on House Bill 3815.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Chair, I move the -8 amendments to House Bill 3815.
Members, it has been moved, the -8 amendments to House Bill 3815. Discussion.
I would just like to make sure that the structure is indeed adjusted.
Let it so be noted that Representative Smith, along with the chair, would instruct the department through the legislation, as they have just previously testified, to make the fee assessments be, in essence, enough to cover the cost of the program and no more. Any additional comments on the -8 amendments? Any objections to the -8 amendments? So noted, -8 amendments are adopted. The chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
I move that House Bill 3815 as amended, that we pass House Bill 3815 as amended and refer it to the floor.
Representative Nolan, we have a prior reference. This has to go to Ways and Means because of the fiscal. Yes. So would you amend your motion?
That's what I meant.
Okay. All right, members, it has, the motion has been made by Representative Nolan to pass House Bill 3815 with a due pass recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? The chair would like to thank all of you that have given so much of your time on this particular issue.
A lot of work.
I know it has been a tremendous amount of work for so many of you, and I very much appreciate your hard work on this issue. This issue has not been addressed since the mid-50s. I think it's appropriate that we're doing it now, and the chair appreciates everyone's consideration in this. And committee members, I appreciate your work in this area also. And I'm going to declare potential conflict of interest, as I am a frequent user of agricultural fertilizers. And with that, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Crook?
Aye. House Bill 3815 is hereby passed, as amended, with a due pass recommendation to the House Ways and Means Committee, or Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair, before you completely close up.
Yes.
I have one last question of the witness who's getting up to leave the room. Mr. Witt, I wonder if you have enough imagination to see this flower bunch as an olive branch and accept it as a peace offering, a gift from me.
Well, Representative Nolan, I think it's entirely appropriate.
Thank you. I accept this, and I will accept the beer that you offered.
Deal.
Representative Nolan, sounds like you're on the hook.
Consensus builders.
Yes, isn't it wonderful?
Maybe you can serve that beer water.
All right, thank you all very much. Next, we're going to open a public hearing only on House Bill 3485. And Ray, would you tell us a little bit about this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3485 creates timber producers' lien. It requires a recording officer of a county in which the timber purchaser has their primary place of business to maintain timber producer lien records. It specifies the attachment date of the lien. There are -1 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and what they do is remove the requirement that the county clerk maintain a handwritten lien record, and they allow the county clerk to maintain a lien record in accordance with the current statute governing recording duties of county clerks. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. All right, the chair would like to call Gene Wilkinson from Oregon Farm Bureau and Christina McNitt from the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, since you're the only two individuals that are signed up to testify on this legislation.
Mr. Chair, may I speak to the bill just briefly before they testify?
Certainly may. Yeah, it certainly is, Representative.
This bill, Wayne Krieger and I are the main sponsors of this bill. And the reason for this bill is we are mindful that in current practice today, there is a situation that arises, unfortunately, where timber landowners, through no fault of their own, will harvest their trees, send them to the mill, and the mill will go bankrupt, and they have no recourse of action to take and no protection under the law to be paid. And this occurrence happens more than we would like to think it does. In our attempt to address this issue, we've had many discussions with the bankers and other people involved. I have a legal opinion from an attorney in Portland and other attorneys regarding this, and we're trying to come up to something that's very reasonable and something that's workable in law. We have drafted the -1 and -2 amendments, but we're still not satisfied with what they do. We tried to piggyback upon the agricultural lien law, found out that that was really not possible. The agricultural lien law is a beautiful piece of work, but it's very specific to what it does. So these two professionals are here at the table to help us make our way through this. And if the committee could be patient with both Wayne and I in getting to a reasonable agreement on this, we would appreciate it.
Okay, I think we can certainly extend that grace to you. The chair would like to switch gears just momentarily. Ladies, could I ask you to step away from the hearing table? I need to call Roy Hemingway from the governor's office to come forward and open a public hearing on House Bill 3363. As Roy, we're trying to accommodate Roy's schedule, and he has some comments from the governor regarding this bill.
Chairman Krupp, members of the committee, thank you for your indulgence. I have to leave and pick up a child. House Bill 3363 declares wolves and wolves hybrids as predators. And I'm Roy Hemingway from the governor's office for the record. And I just wanted to let you know that as the bill is written, we would have problems with this bill. There's no question that wolves, if and when they come to Oregon, could potentially be a problem for livestock. There are plenty of other animals which are problems for agricultural producers and for ranchers, which we do not classify as predators as the means of dealing with their problems. For instance, elk probably do more damage than any other animal in Oregon to agricultural crops, and what we do with elk is we try to manage them. We don't declare them as predators and allow somebody to shoot them at will. What the bill does is, by declaring something a predator, it basically says that someone can kill the animal at any time. In fact, they're a nuisance and they should be eliminated. That would, if Oregon made that law, it would, if someone who didn't know better and shot a wolf would be getting a signal under Oregon law that this is appropriate behavior, not only legal, but appropriate behavior, whereas under federal law, it's a crime that subjects you to criminal penalties because you are harming a threatened species. And whereas we don't deny that potentially this animal could become a problem, we think the way to deal with it is through management and working with the federal agencies rather than trying to set up a confrontation with federal law that does citizens a disservice because they would be getting a very mixed signal from government. And that concludes my testimony.
Okay, Roy, thank you very much. Do we have questions? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, is your conclusion upon studying the situation that the gray wolf is a endangered species under federal law?
Representative Ackerman, the gray wolf is a protected species. I believe it's a threatened species under federal law, under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and so it is illegal to harm or harass this species under federal law and can subject you to criminal penalties if you do that.
And as a follow-up, do you conclude then if this bill passes, there'd be a direct conflict between this state law as enacted in federal law?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have an opinion as to whether federal law has preempted this field in dealing with the gray wolf as a predatory animal?
Representative Ackerman, the attorney for the Department of Fish and Wildlife is sitting behind me in the seats. I'm not going to pretend to practice law, particularly in an area that I know not that much about. Our position in the governor's office from a policy standpoint is to take as much authority as possible to manage species within the federal authority, as much authority as federal law allows. And so where there isn't a direct conflict, we would try to manage this species.
Thank you.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you able to tell us whether or not the governor will veto this bill if it were to pass out of this committee?
Representative Hobson, at this stage, we don't like to use the veto word. This bill is still in its original committee. We wanted to lay out here some concerns about the legislation. We try not to to use the V word early on.
There are no further questions. We'll recess the work session in 3363. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
And we will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3485. You know, the two professionals return.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, I'm Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association this afternoon. At issue is House Bill 3485. And Oregon Small Woodlands Association supports the concept that brought this bill forward, and Representative Smith outlined well the process that that went through, and basically it was a parallel of the ag lien statutes. I think my colleague Gene Wilkinson from the Farm Bureau and I have learned some things in the last day or two while studying this bill, and one of those things is that there is actually current statute on the books with respect to liens for timberland owners, and that is a statute I passed out, ORS 87-222. It's not a pretty statute to read. It's kind of confusing, and it talks about loggers, woodworkers, and timberland owners' liens, and there are three different conditions, and one of those, sub 3 talks about subject to the limitation in subsection 4 of this section, if a person cuts or hires another to cut timbers on the land of the person and delivers or hires another to deliver the timbers to a purchaser, the person has a lien upon the timbers for the lesser of A, the reasonable or agreed value of timbers, or B, $125,000. In researching this further, we have discovered that liens placed under this statute have a higher priority, and that's listed under ORS 87-146. They have a higher priority than a Uniform Commercial Code Security Agreement, which was one of the amendments that we had discussed about putting in House Bill 3485. So to make a long and complicated story short, we're proposing that the committee might consider taking current statute and moving the $125,000 to something closer to $1 million, which would be in closer alignment with today's economy in the timber business. And we've also gone to legislative council because we had some question about whether or not the relating clause on House Bill 3485 was broad enough to incorporate that type of change. And our the initial response to that inquiry is that indeed it would be broad enough, and that would be something this committee could consider if they chose to move that way.
Let me know if you want to go there. Proceed,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
Christina, since I talked to you a few minutes ago, this particular statute, ORS with the 87-222, we had looked at. And again, as you said, a person who performs labor assists, and that goes down when the laborers perform or services, and that goes on, request of the owner, a person who permits another. If a person cuts or hires another to cut timbers, land of the person and delivers. And we looked at that and we looked at that, and I still can't tell you if a small woodland owner who cuts his own logs and delivers them would be covered. And that's why we went the direction that we had, and we may need to do some wordsmithing in here in addition to maybe raising the limit.
Vice Chair King and members, that's precisely right. This is not a very artistic form, and we had a discussion with legislative council, and on second or third reading, we did all end up concluding that if you own the land, that this lien did apply to you. It was just kind of hard and circuitous to get to. So I don't think rewriting some of the section would be a bad thing.
Proceed. You're ready.
Chairman King, members of the committee, I'm Jean Underhill Wilkinson with the Oregon Farm Bureau.
I agree with Representative Krieger in that it's maybe if you are going to expand the limitation laid out and expand the $125,000 limitation to kind of bring it up, update it, to bring it up to something that's realistic in terms of small woodland owners and what they are cutting on their property and what that value of that timber is today. I think this bill, this provisions were drafted, you know, in 1975, and I think they legitimately need to be brought up to date. And maybe while you do that, we could just make small changes to subsection 3 there to clarify who this statute is supposed to apply to. I think the intent is to apply to timberland owners when they cut their timber so that they would be covered and given some protection. But I think that that would be something that could be easily clarified. I just wanted to make another comment. I do think when you talk about providing lien options for landowners, you have, of course, as been said, various options. You have a statutory lien rights that you can put in, applying to the different commodities or different things you're trying to address and the type of people you're trying to protect, give protection to. You also have the UCC, as Christina mentioned, where anyone could file a financing statement and get a security agreement with a debtor and go ahead and file a UCC financing statement with the Secretary of State. That is a more cumbersome process. It is a first-in-time, first-in-right type of priority under the UCC, and you have to, the security agreement and financing statements do have to be signed by the debtor, and there's some other requirements that have to be met. So that is a more rigorous process. It's not nearly the quality of lien that you will find under ORS 87. So since timber producers, I think the intent of the statute under 87.222 was already written, I think, with the intent of providing protection to timber producers, especially smaller timber producers. It's already in there. It's a lien that applies specifically to them. It is a first priority position lien. It does have already laid out all the criteria that needs to be met. I think that is the preferable type of lien. And if we could tweak that some to bring it up to date and make it more clear, I think that would be the easiest solution to this. I think that you also need to look at Senate Bill 171. It is a UCC revisions bill that is going through the process. Now, it's a large bill that you probably need to catch up on to see how it might apply to this. It was attempting to revise UCC Article 9 and potentially bring into it some of these liens under ORS Chapter 87. Now, I know with the agricultural liens, we have specifically requested that they be exempted out of that bill, and that is the status of those. But in terms of this lien under 87.222, you need to see how that bill is dealing with that statute. You may find that it's Senate Bill 171 is changing what you're reading here. So you need to check on that, too. Now, also, I don't know what kind of fiscal impact this, if you decide to go with what Christina and I are suggesting, I don't know what kind of fiscal impact that might have. I assume that it would have zero, since this is an existing lien that the Secretary of State is already assumed to have the responsibility to maintain a database of those types of liens, and I think as you, under ORS 87, they can charge fees for filing those types of liens.
Excuse me.
So that's it.
What was the Senate bill number?
Senate Bill 171.
Thank you.
And that concludes some of my remarks. I can answer any questions or any other remarks can be made.
Senator Ackerman.
Thank you. To each of you, the way I read this, page 1 at line 29, the lien is filed in the county where the purchaser maintains primary place of business. Is that the only place that a filing would take place under this act?
Representative Ackerman, are you...
He's talking about the bill.
Are you talking about the bill?
Yes.
The original bill?
Right.
I think the original bill was, I think what happened there was the agriculture lien bill, which you have heard and passed,
right,
was put into House Bill 3045 and just changed it to be applicable to timber and timber owners. So the way the original bill reads, I'm not surprised if it says that the lien would have to be filed in the county. Now,
could I just pursue that, because I want to, there's a point I want to make here. If I follow this under 3485, the producer would have to file the lien in the county where the purchaser, namely the debtor, maintains a primary place of business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose I'm the purchaser of your timber product, but my principal place of business is in Boise, Idaho. Mm-hmm. Do you lose your lien?
Representative Ackerman, that's a good question, and it's...
I think you do, and what you might want to do then is just substitute the word producer for purchaser, and then the lien would be filed where the purchaser has, where the producer has his main place of business, which would obviously be in some county in Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, that's an interesting point. I didn't clarify very well when I talked about substituting the ORS 87-222 for basically a gut and stuff of House Bill 3485. However, your question is still relevant, because if we did just modify the provisions in 87-222, there are filing notices and requirements, and it says right here, a person claiming a lien sent to that shall file a written notice of claim of lien with the recording officer of the county in which the lien debtor resides. Or if the lien debtor is a business, the county in which the lien debtor has its principal place of business, not later than 60 days. So I think that your point is interesting, but it actually then would be riddled through all lien statutes in the state, because that applies to all of them. Ag services lien, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I know that in the other liens that we considered, as I recall, the filing was made with the Secretary of State. Is that our recollection from the earlier lessons that the Chair gave us on this topic?
Representative Ackerman, as I recall, that the current lien statutes, one type of lien you filed with the county, one type of lien
right.
you filed with Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
We changed it so that all the liens would be filed with the Secretary of State. I do think that that's a preferable mechanism. We could look at whether it be possible to change that here, but that mm-hmm. gets into a more complicated
I think the bill
situation that applies to
it's somewhat flawed as it is, and I guess as long as we went through all the agriculture producer liens earlier, and I think we standardized the recording
yep.
at the Secretary
yep.
of State's office, perhaps that's the better option for this one, because some of the testimony we had from the producers and the farmers were they didn't know where to file their liens.
Mm-hmm.
If they file them in the wrong place, they have no lien. Thank you.
Good point.
We'll see if we can pursue that.
Representative Smith.
Representative Ackerman, your points are well taken. I'd like to thank my people for testifying. I think we need to look at some of these ideas that have been brought forth today. We'll work on and bring them back to the committee when we have a good bill. In its present form, it is not what we want and not where we want to go, and I think you pointed that out. So thank you very much for coming today.
You're welcome.
I don't know where our leader is, but I'd be happy to help any work group straighten out the problem, because I think your clients need the protection.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And Representative Ackerman, you're way ahead of me. I was just going to suggest that maybe they could head an interim omnibus lien law so that no one will lose any money if we have bankruptcy or fraud, and that maybe you could help them out with that during the interim. Seems like everybody like a lien law now. Okay. There are no other witnesses signed up. No one appears to come forward. We will close the work session on 3485, and I will reconvene the work session. No, that was a public hearing, excuse me. And we will reconvene the work session on 3363, and we will also be in recess for a moment for the chair to return. We are in work session. 3363.
I think we're standing at ease.